Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the NYBS Radio Show, home of the New York Bigfoot Society.
Gary Hootenhala here, and welcome to another episode of NYBS Radio, right here from the great state of New York. Today, we are doing part two from last week's show, talking about aliens and UFOs and possible disclosure. As you know, in the past couple weeks, the Pentagon came out and released those that Navy footage of the pilot seeing a possible UFO. They tried to cover it up, but they just couldn't do it. There was just too many people when this came out. There was this, you know, came forward with it. So we're going to continue that talk because we got cut short last time. So we got plenty of time to talk all things aliens and UFOs, and it's a little bit different, you know. But let me bring in my boy Kenny. Kenny, you there? Kenny, you there? Kenny? Trying to bring Kenny in.
Hey, can you hear me?
Kenny, there we go, there we go. Yeah, you were up, for some reason didn't click in. What's going on, Mr. Cryptopunkologist?
Hey, just rocking and rolling. Rocking and rolling.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's it.
Looking
that's
at
it.
Crypto.
You know, another week. Yeah, that's it. Man. That's where it is, the monsters, man.
I love them. Fantastic.
Gotta love the
monsters. Exciting, mysterious.
It is. It's so, I mean, that's what I love about monsters. And, you know, like, you know, you look into, you know, a lot more monsters than I do. And I'm like, you know, I'm very fascinated by that because you know so much about the lore and all things, you know, that the Native Americans used to think about, all these different creatures and, you know, from lake monsters to aerial phenomena and things like that. It's just such a, the knowledge base is amazing. And it's just like, it's really cool where I'm more of just like, I stay with Bigfoot, you know what I mean? And even though like so interested in that dog man, I'm telling you, but the more I keep hearing about these dog man encounters, I listened to a bunch of them over the weekend while I was at work, and I'm like, man, there's still no good dog man encounter. It's like terrorizing people, you know?
Yeah, no, I know, you know, and with, you know, dog man, you know, resembling, you know, Sasquatch in certain features, obviously not the face, but I mean, some of these Sasquatch sightings could very well be Dogman and vice versa.
Yeah, no, you're 100%. And actually, when I was doing a little bit of research on it, like I say, I'm very green in the subject, but they do have different classifications of Dogmen. And there is one classification of Dogman that kind of almost resembles more of a Squatch. And by the snout of the face is a lot more like almost it's a regular nose. So it's like wattier, almost like a bulldog, we'll say, or like a pug or something like that, smushed in more
flatter.
Than, you know, it's flatter, yeah, more than your typical, you know, dog man that has like a almost like a wolf, German Shepherd, Husky type snout. So, yeah, I mean, who knows, you know, it's one of those interesting phenomena. We do have plenty of stories here in New York of dog men. So, yeah, who knows, but the cryptid world, I'll tell you. So what are we going to rant about today before we bring in our guest?
All right, so I got a quick little rant kind of discussion here. you know, it's about you know, the community of you know, cryptid and Bigfoot groups. You know, we've talked about this before, but this is a little bit in a different direction. So I get a lot of requests every day to join different groups, you know, whether it be Sasquatch or it be cryptids, you know, or folklore, you know, something like that. So, I mean, I get a lot of them, and usually there's three reasons why I'll join one. One, the name I think is really, really awesome. Two, there's a great picture on it. Or three, somebody of, you know, that I consider to be very trustworthy or credible recommended it. So those are the three reasons I join groups. I don't, and again, I get so many requests. A lot of the time I go through, I'm hitting join. Now, what happens is, as an author, and I also work in marketing, I do a lot of promotion. I do a lot of promotion on events. I do a lot of self-promotion. And so I've said it over and over again, you know, look me up. And if you don't want me to self-promote in your group, please don't ask me to join. Because if I can't self-promote, there's no reason for me to be in that group. Now, I understand that might sound a little cocky, but here, let me explain why. Me joining a group, it's a partnership, in my opinion. Okay, people start groups, okay, and they send out invites because they want people to join, because the more members they have, the better it looks. The more people they have that join that have a name in the community, like I've got a name in the community, I'm not the biggest name, nowhere near it, but I've got a name in the community, beneficial to have me part of the group as well as my number to be part of it. So as an author and, you know, doing, you know, events, you know, scheduled all across the country, doing different radio shows, this and that, what is my return on my investment of my time to this group? If all I can do is go on there, see the same meme about, you know, Sasquatch or Bigfoot hide and seek champion of the world, or the meme of the Bigfoot dancing, or just, you know, or folks just, you know, arguing about blurry pictures and red circles. What's my return on this investment? Like, I'm helping them by being a part of it, having the number on there so they can go up. Where's my return on investment on this? If I can't, in all honesty, let me put it to you like this, okay? Everybody knows Shelly. I know you know Shelly. Everybody's heard of Shelly. Okay, who's Shelly? Mm-hmm. Shelly sells seashells by the seashore. Okay, now if Shelly joins a Bigfoot group and or a cryptid group or a paranormal group, and then goes on there and starts advertising, hey, all seashells are 50% off this Saturday. Come down by the seashore to buy some seashells. Okay, I get it. It has nothing to do with it, but what I'm putting in there, I'm putting events where there's going to be, you know, discussion of cryptids and Bigfoot, books that have to do with discussion of Bigfoot, cryptids, different paranormal, you know, radio show events where, you know, folks can tune in. I mean, we had Ken Gerhardt on here not long ago. We've got Katie Elizabeth, who's going to be on the show. So, again, it's not like I'm going on there saying, hey, come buy seashells. I'm going on there. Mm-hmm. I'm promoting my book. I'm promoting events. I'm promoting radio shows. So if you don't want that in your group, don't ask me to be in your group, because I'm going to promote. I'm going to self-promote. I'm going to self-promote events. I'm going to promote other researchers, other authors. It's just it's what I do. So if I can't get that return on my investment of time to your group, there's no reason for me to be in there. What are your thoughts on that, Gary?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with what you're saying. You know, I'm not an author at all, but I can understand coming from your perspective that, you know, you're there to, you know, help the community. You're there to, you know, you write books about the interests of the subject matter, you know, along with Ken and all these other authors that are out there, and Dr. Meldrum and all these people. So I totally agree with you. And, you know, that's one reason I personally stay out of those groups. me personally, but it's, I come from a different standpoint of I'm a researcher. So as a researcher, if you're not getting any, if I'm not getting any substance from any kind of group other than, like you said, you know, the hide and seek championship or, you know, Bigfoot riding the Loch Ness Monster, which that would be so cool to see in real life. But yeah, you know, if I'm not getting any substance, then there's no reason for me to really be even be on there. And it totally makes sense. You know, you're out in the community and you're helping so many people, you know, get the word out of, you know, different shows that, you know, and authors and researchers that really don't have a big voice. So, you know, if anything, you know, people should understand that as a community as a whole, we try to get the word out for good, solid researchers and good, solid people. And a lot of these groups, unfortunately, just, you know, they just want to, they want a lot of fluff and red circles and a lot of blob squatches. And like I just posted, I did a Facebook Live event right before the show. That's one of the things I said is, you know, unfortunately, sometimes we have to put circles around things, and I hate it. Like, I absolutely hate it. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's what you and I don't stand for that. Like, we stand for, listen, this is what it is. You know, if you can't see it, then it's not there. Unfortunately, we also realize that sometimes when you look at tracks, especially, there's no depth in them. And when there's no depth in them, the pictures come out like garbage. And once you put a circle around it, you can see it. But once again, we have to like kind of bribe you to see that circle. So it totally makes sense with what you're saying. And yeah, I mean, disclaimer anyway, they should have it right up in there. That way, you know, everybody knows, like, listen, don't share stuff and don't come up. It's all ego.
That's the thing. Well, that's the thing, Gary, is they do. But I get so many, I don't have time to sit there and read through rules. You know,
I
just don't have time to do that. And the other thing, too, is when I'm posting in like 150 groups. So it's when I'm posting, not like going through looking at everyone. It's a copy, paste, copy, paste, copy, paste, copy, paste.
Oh, I understand.
So, I mean, you know, even though there are, you know, some of them, they have that like in their rules, and I get that. But again, I don't have time to sit there and go through that. And again, it has to do with the content and context of the actual group. And the other thing too is, you know, by saying that, you know, not to do that, I think you're also robbing, you know, information from the members of the group, because, you know, I've gone onto groups before and I found out like there was going to be this radio show, you know, with this guest on it. I'm like, oh wow, that's awesome. I never would have seen that. And if that group, you know, admin didn't allow them to post that in there, well, who wouldn't? I never would have known about it, you know. Again, you know, if I'm going to join a group, me personally, I need a return on my investment of time as well, and. You know, so it's good for everybody. And again, there's a lot of awesome groups out there, you know, that get that I'm a part of. Like there's like Bigfoot, The Real Truth, the admin on there, his name's David, awesome guy. You know, he gets it. There's a lot of them that they get it. You know, Bigfoot Quest, Edward Munge, you know, he gets it. You know, it's just like they get it. Like this is actually part of the community. If there was a group that specifically says, you know, just woo pictures. Okay. Well then I get it. You know, you say that right at the name of it. But, so again, that's kind of my little rant. Like I said, you know, it might sound like I'm coming across cocky. I'm not. It's just, you know, my time's as valuable as anybody else's. And, you know, I try to be respectful of all the groups and everything, but again, at the same time, I mean, with the friend requests that I get and then the group requests, I just can't go through them. I mean, I've had some admins reach out to me and say, hey, I tell you what, you know, if you're going to post something, reach out to me first. Okay. I don't even know what group they're from. It's because, you know, I try to be a part of all of them, and, you know, because at the same time, you know, there's content that's posted that's very valuable that you know, I've gotten a lot from. But again, I mean, as an author and, you know, explorer and, you know, crypto punkologist. Yeah, I said it.
Yeah,
you know, there's events going on all over the place, and you know, a lot of the time I'm part of them, and I'm going to talk about that. I mean, it kind of is what it is. If I was part of just like 10 groups, it would be different. But when I go to, you know, post events or this or that, again, it's just copy paste, copy paste, copy paste, copy paste. But you know, I appreciate the groups, you know, that I'm in. I appreciate the admins of the group. You know, I get it. It's a thankless job. But you know, again, I gotta get some return on my end as well, because in reality, we're, you know, the person that started the group, they're doing a lot of self promoting by wanting to get numbers in there, wanting to get people in there.
Exactly.
So it's gotta be a little bit of a two-way street here. It can't just be cut off. So.
No, and I totally agree with you. And you're saying the content that you're putting out is good content anyway. I'm not being biased. I'm just telling it the way it is. I do love you, and that's why, you know, that's what I was just going into that, is that's what's great about, you know, me and you as a team, is like we work together, but we see both sides. Like I'm not an author, so I don't see that side that you see, you know, and as a field researcher that lives in the woods, you now see how what like a real researcher does, which is really boring in a lot of ways. So we get to see like a lot of the things together, and it's an amazing thing. And we put out we try to put out the best material for the community at large. It's not to, you know, become rich and famous, as far as I'm concerned, for the team, you know, and as an author, you know, you should get your name out there, because, you know, what you're putting out is good material, and it's not hurting anybody. And that's the main thing. It's not hurting anybody. And like you said, at the end of the day, the material, if you're putting out good material, you know, you should get cash in on the backside. And like you say, a lot of these groups that are out there, they want the big name people. And that's all it's about, is the big name people. But yet you have people like us and Edward and things like that. Like, we're all solid people that bring a lot to the table. So I totally agree with you, man. And, you know, it's a good rant, because it's something that needs to be addressed. I see the same exact thing in the hiking community. So it's funny, because I look at all these group hiking pages, and if you go hiking right now during COVID, oh my God, bro, they rip you apart. Like, they shred you apart. And it's like, listen, you know, like, we don't, it's crazy. So I can go on an hour about that alone, and I just keep quiet. If you're going to hike, just don't post it on Facebook, honestly. Just do your thing. You know what I mean? But that's, I understand.
Yeah.
I mean, those groups are just, they just get kind of out of control.
So the moral of the discussion and rant is, don't be like Shelley.
Don't be like Shelley. There you go. All right. Well, that's enough of that. We always have to do a nice rant, because it's been a week, and there's always things that come up that, you know, we would love to talk about on the Facebook page, but we don't, because we can't. It's easier if we talk. So there's that. So with that foot of nation,
before you go any further, Manimal Research is another group that I'm a part of. The admin, Wayne, awesome, awesome guys. Anybody who, if you're not part of Manimal Research and in that group, definitely look them up and jump on that. Fantastic group.
Yeah, for
all
real.
Right, go ahead,
yeah, they're going to be – no, that's great. I'm glad you said that, because Manimal Research, Wayne and his crew – Rick and Jasper are going to be on our show at the end of the month. So we're bringing them on. We were on their show a couple of weeks ago. It was a lot of fun. Where are they? Well, they're from down south, right? They're out Westmore, right?
I don't know.
She's on Eastern Standard Time. I know. I was thinking about it, because when I talk to him, like, he's on Eastern Standard Time. But yeah, they're great guys. They're outside the state of New York, so we're bringing them in, and we're going to talk, because they're great. They're once again some great researchers. So everyday people doing their thing. So I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you so much. So yeah, so a little bit of Bigfoot, and then we're going to get to our guest. Is, you know, I did a Facebook Live update on the NYBS Facebook page. Go ahead and check it out if you want to know what we've been doing. I laid it all out, what we've been doing, okay? And we had a good turnout. I'm really happy that it went well. I'll be having another one in a couple of weeks. It's very important that we share information and what's working and what's not. So that's the main thing. We have to share information. You don't have to share your research areas, but we have to share.
I just checked on that too, and the views are up to 271 views so far.
That's great. So that's 271 people that we were able to hopefully help in their research. That's the goal, okay? I'm out in the woods putting in the hours and time to help the community as a whole, you know, and that's what it's about. I mean, that's what it's about. So part two, aliens and UFOs. I'm super stoked. We ran out of time last time. I'm going to bring Jeff and Amy in from the Tri-City New York Paranormal Society, which is my parent paranormal team, to the New York Bigfoot Society is the sister team to the Tri-City New York Paranormal Society. So let's bring it in. Jeff and Amy, are you there?
Hey, Gary, I'm here.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, of course. I mean, come on. I couldn't just leave that conversation and not finish it up because it was awesome. I mean, I was still jazzed after I got off. I'm like, man, why do we have to end this? So we have a nice 45 minutes now to talk about all things aliens and UFOs and disclosure and all fun stuff. So I couldn't leave that hanging.
Awesome.
Yeah, buddy. So we're going to start with Jeff.
Thanks for having us back.
Oh, of course. I mean, please. No, thank you for coming, and thank you for the knowledge that you're bringing to the table for our guests. Like, you know, aliens and UFOs is such a hot subject, and it always is. The one thing that never kind of goes away is aliens and UFOs. Ghosts will kind of come up and down. They'll get popular, and then it's not popular. Cryptids go through the cycles also. They're hot, and then they're not. But the thing that always remains of interest is UFOs and in the interest of ufology. There's just so much to it, and I think because of the, you know, more of the government side of conspiracy with ufology, it's just, once again, it's such an interesting subject matter, who knows what. So, thank you guys so much for being back. So we're going to start with Jeff. Jeff, we left off last week. Oh, my God, I feel like this is like an episode of Survivor. We left off last week on a deserted island. We left off last week talking about what if the government now, like, you know, the government comes out and discloses aliens do exist, all right? But how do you think now society as a whole, when I say society, we'll say civilization, not just America, civilization, how would the news and how do you think they would take it knowing that we're going through COVID-19 right now and people are taking toilet paper like it's gold, like, you know, now it's getting a little bit better. How do you think it would be if aliens, like, they just said, oh, just so you know, we're getting abducted and every other thing?
You know, I want to start again with that quote that I stole from the fictional MIB movie, that the person is smart and the people are stupid. And I'm not saying that people are stupid. What it is people are panicky, and we already saw that right now with COVID-19 and people panicking with the stores and buying up all their stuff and readily, you know, handing over, ready to give over some freedoms, you know, in terms of what the government's able to do and control. And I think on a global scale, it would be worse. I think there's been a few governments, like we were talking about, and they talk about in the new movie, that Stephen Greer movie, about, I think Amy mentioned it last time, I forget what, Liechtenstein, I think it was, that he tried to come out, and I'm sure there's others, obviously like JFK, you know, I think every president since at least JFK has been like, I'm going to disclose aliens, I'm going to disclose Area 51, I'm going to disclose everything, and then they all shut up. And I think it has to do with that control factor as well, and again, people are panicky. In psychology, we in psychology have, there's a theory called groupthink, and just to really quickly go over it, it's a theory that describes the faulty decision making that can occur in groups as a result of forces that bring a group together. I think if disclosure happened, there would be so much upheaval. There's so many things that would happen just in our own psychology and consciousness as a species. That I think it would be like, I mean, COVID-19 is global, but I think it would be like that on a much grander scale. I think people would be very panicked. They would be very readily willing to give up even more of their freedoms. They would be stocking up on a ton more than just toilet paper at the stores. So many things that it's going to upheaval. Like, I mean, suddenly we have this exo species coming from a different planet, and suddenly not only are we not the only species, or not the only intelligent species in the universe or in our universe, we are not the smartest of species, as they already mastered interplanetary travel. And then on top of it, you have religion. Now, not every religion, you know, there's different Native American spiritualities, I think, that, you know, talk about aliens and coming from there. But, I mean, we're talking about the majority of the religious people in the world. Suddenly, like, how is that going to work with religion, you know, and when you have this other species? And it's a whole upheaval of, like I said, like the consciousness of our species as a whole. It'd be crazy.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad that you brought up that whole religion aspect. Kenny, we can kind of just hit on that real quick together. Like Bigfoot, let's take Bigfoot for instance. If Bigfoot, if it comes out that a Bigfoot body is found, and then the DNA sampling comes back to be Bigfoot is a type of human, and I don't like using the word missing link per se, but comes out to be some form of human, that could take, you know, that takes religion, and that could kind of bend that a little bit. What do you think? You know, what do you think, Ken?
Well, you know, when you go back and study theology, which, you know, I've done some study on, you know, in the Bible, you know, the word talks of, you know, giants. And as far as, you know, obviously, you know, there was nothing that specifically said, hey, yeah, this is a Sasquatch. The word talks of giants and large people. So that could very well be in a reference of Sasquatch, just, you know, because Sasquatch obviously was, didn't come from the Bible. It came from, you know, Native Americans. They've got over 100 names for a Bigfoot. But as far as, you know, I don't think it would do, you know, it would change anything as far as religion wise. I don't think it would change anybody's beliefs. I don't know how, you know, it originated and how it originally came out, but, you know, as far as, you know, maybe one of the giants, you know, having that, you know, genetic defect of, you know, hypertrichosis, where the whole body just grows hair. Maybe yeah. It originated out of that, and it went from there. I mean, but as far as like, I know, you know, like I'm a Christian. I go to church every week when it's open and there isn't a COVID scare going on. And I know for me, it wouldn't change anything. You know, because again, you know, there's talk in the Bible, not a lot, but when you study chapters and then you step kind of out of the Bible and pull other aspects of theology in there, you know, there's a lot of talk about, again, giants and, you know, giant humans and, you know, one which obviously wasn't seen as any type of Sasquatch or any type of, you know, form of alien or anything like that, but, you know, everybody's heard of the story of David and Goliath. So there were giants, there were giant people, large people. So, I mean, for me, it wouldn't change anything. But you know, for some people, it might really even test their faith.
Yeah. And then I'm sure, you know, like we talk about the ancient alien theory, you know what I mean? And things like that.
Yeah.
Amy, what do you think would happen with those kind of things? Like, you know, do you think, you know, if it got disclosed that, you know, aliens are here, and then all this talk from that we're actually being subject to just watching History Channel, you watch Ancient Aliens and that show has been on forever. Like, do you think that it would be kind of like people, it would change people's religion? Or almost do you think that we're being kind of coaxed to be like, listen, we're going to keep putting this stuff on TV, desensitize us to the idea, because when you actually look at a lot of cultures, a lot of their things do look like it's alien origins. So do you think, what do you think about that?
Well, I sort of think that it depends on how it's couch to the public. So we talked a lot last week about how a lie is best hidden between two truths, and, you know, truth A would be they exist, period, that there is intelligent life in the universe, sentient beings that other than us. So truth number one. And then truth number two, yes, they are visiting this planet, and the government is aware and things like that. But, you know, sort of the lie in the middle being that they're a threat. They're a threat to the dominion of our own planet, and that we all need to unite as a human race and fight these things off. So if it's presented that way, then yes, I think it could lead to sort of a pandemonium, right? In one respect,
yep.
It would unite everybody, but the fear of you know, something is a threat to the dominion of our own planet, that's pretty terrifying, and then would call into question all these different things, religion, philosophy, all that stuff. But then the other way to look at it is, if it wasn't couched that way, if it was presented in, you know, hey, they do exist, they're here, we can have some sort of peaceful interaction with them, you know, and this would benefit us in so many ways, tremendously, technologically, our understanding of the universe, all these things, then I think it could go, you know, very well. And then I think religion, let's just say it's the latter of the two here that it's presented. I think religion has always been successful through millennia at adapting to the times and keeping its main purpose in mind, which is control. So I think that religion would adapt and morph, you know, that there is sentient life out there in the universe, into the fact that it's all still coming from this universal being called God, and, you know, they would adapt it in, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it would totally make sense, you know what I mean? They would have to. I mean, at that point, you really have no choice in the matter, because if they did come out and say these things were real, then, I mean, they would have to adapt in some way, shape, or form, because it is what it is at that point, you know, so... Yeah. So, Amy, what do we want to talk about next? What do you say? We have a lot of subjects that we didn't get to cover last week, so what do you want to go into?
Yeah, I'm excited. I've been excited all week to talk about we talked about close encounters and the different definitions last week, you know, close encounters of the first, second, third, and fourth, and fifth kind. And we talked about how close encounters of the first, second, third, and fourth were invented by J. Allen Hynek, who was researching claims of UFO sightings for the military, Project Blue Book, and that's sort of where his classification system stopped, was at level four. But now in more recent times, we have this close encounters of the fifth kind, which is the peaceful, human-initiated communication with intelligence from the elsewhere in the universe. And so we mentioned Dr. Stephen Greer's movie Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, and in it he has these different protocols that you can follow to initiate this peaceful communication. And it starts off by, it's mainly through meditation, and I'd like to talk through the protocols and then sort of dive into what is meditation, what does it mean in terms of our collective consciousness, consciousness in general, and how that could unite us with the aliens. So that's sort of what I had in mind tonight, Gary.
Let's go. We'll go right in. Let's go. Let's hear it.
All right. So the CE5 protocols, I've never participated in them, but from what I've read and understand, it sort of starts with prior to your meditation, setting your intention. So your intention would be to communication with another alien species. Then you go into a meditation. I think Stephen Greer has an app that has some guided meditation, but I don't think a guided meditation is necessarily required. If you're a seasoned meditator, you know, just do whatever works for you. So you've got your intention to make this peaceful communication. You meditate, you know, 20, 30 minutes, whatever. You come out of this meditation and then you sort of intuit, or you could use the term remote view, project your consciousness, whatever. Try to get a feel for where, you know, whoever you're reaching out to is in the universe, like almost on a map. Like, hey, where are you guys? Are you guys in, you know, Pleiades? and, you know, just get a feel. And so once you feel like you have a connection, you basically guide them into your location. You, like, vector them in, give them a trajectory of where you are on planet Earth. So when he was describing this, it sort of reminded me of, you know, the Google Earth app. When you very first open the Google Earth app, it's like a zoomed out view of the planet. And then it just zooms you in to exactly where you are on planet Earth. So almost sort of like that, like, hey, I'm in the Milky Way galaxy. You know, I'm on Earth in, you know, this solar system, and then sort of like zoom them in to where you are on planet Earth. And you just do that, just intuitively. I guess you could say it out loud. You could say it in your mind, however you want to do it. And then that sort of guides them into you. And then you just sort of watch the sky and wait for this contact. And from some of the videos and stuff I've seen, it's pretty amazing. Granted, I'm super skeptical. So some of the videos they showed in the movie, they looked like those, you know, those paper lanterns people light.
Those Japanese lanterns.
Whatever. So some of them, because, you know, some of them, they were like, oh, there's three of them, and they all went out at the same time, and it's like, oh, these look like paper lanterns, you know?
Yeah,
but
and that sounds similar.
I'm not saying they were, but
yeah, no, and it's funny that you know we're talking like on this. So, you know, when you do a meditation, you're basically putting your frequency out in the environment, and supposedly we can bring them into us. And then what we hear now in the UFO world is abductees come out. And when abductees come out, normally, you know, they'll be like, oh, I've got abducted, this, that, and the other thing. When the UFO researcher actually goes and digs into what's going on, they come to find out that how people, like, you know, usually when someone's psychic, someone else in that family is said to be psychic, okay? Now we have with ufology, when someone gets abducted, someone else in that family has been abducted before. So it almost seems like, you know, these same type of things, like it stays within your, you know, the person, so in the family. So an abduction happens by, like, a dad will come to find out that his, like, great-grandfather was abducted, you know, by aliens back in this time. So it's almost like, you know, we can zoom in any kind of communication through these methods almost.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to talk about, like, why would meditation in and of itself make this connection?
Well,
and so that sort of dives into...
I'd like to allude to that a little bit or expand upon that. Amy, I want to. I know you were talking about the paper lanterns thing in the new movie there with him. I'm curious what you thought of the ones that were closer up, the ones that looked like they were behind people and within a lot closer distance, like what you kind of thought of them as being skeptical.
Oh, some of them looked more interesting. You know, they didn't look like aircraft misidentified or anything like that. Some of them were more plausible than others. I think the paper lantern one was footage from Oakland, California. So if anyone listening happens to watch the movie, they kind of put captions at the bottom to say where it came from. And this particular one came from Oakland, California. It looked like classic paper lanterns. You know, I've gone down to the beach in North Carolina with my family, and we've lit them off, and they all go up. And it if you don't know what they are and you're a distance away, boy, it does look odd, you know. and they all sort of go out at the same time. And, I was just skeptical of some of the footage, but others look more plausible. But I know the one you're talking about where there actually was a figure – standing behind somebody, and one of the things they mentioned is that not only will they see things, strange things in the sky, they'll actually have contact with the aliens themselves physically. They even said sometimes after the event's over and they go back to their hotel room, later that night these interactions will continue. And this one gentleman said that he was interacting with them, and he basically said, hey, I've been hard of hearing my whole life, you know, and is there anything you can do about that? And he sounded like he wasn't trying to get something out of it. I think he was just curious, you know, if they could do anything for him. And apparently, according to him, they healed him. He doesn't have to wear hearing aids anymore or anything like that. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and this is Jeff. I'm going to bounce this one to you. So let's think about this from a really logical standpoint. So kind of like how when we go and do ghost work, right, one of the things that we say is, you know, we're trying to communicate with a ghost, trying to, you know, get things to talk to us, blah, 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 and we're putting ourselves out there, okay? Same thing, I guess, in the Bigfoot community when, you know, we're out in the woods. We're putting ourselves out there for anything and any kind of interpretation. Anything could happen. So if we're going to sit and meditate, okay, and then try to draw in an alien or a species that we don't even know about, don't you think that could be playing with fire too, knowing that there's that these things have been abducting us for a very long period of time from these thousands of people that are having, you know, finding microchips in them and pieces of metal and having all these, you know, experiences. Don't you think that this could be playing with fire also doing something like this if it does work?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so there's multiple, you know, when you look at the UFO community and the alien community at large, you know, there's some understanding that there's a possibility of multiple different kinds of extraterrestrial beings, and not all of them are benevolent. He doesn't really, it's not really alluded to in the movie either. And for what they're talking about in the movie is them being interdimensional. And I think it kind of coalesces a little bit like with some of the thought and obviously some of the theories of the UFOs too. But we certainly are opening up ourselves. If we are kind of seeking out, and for someone that's uninitiated, especially with the paranormal, like we've talked about many times with the group, for someone that's uninitiated and not really prepared for what they could possibly encounter, you know, they could bring something home, they could invite the wrong things in, you know, depending on what they're doing, and they could put themselves in harm's way. And certainly, I think it can be the case with the CE5 protocol as well, just trying to put yourself out there. Another point I wanted to pick up on when he was talking about the meditation is what I saw with the movie is almost a possible confirmation. You know, I've done a lot of, I'd say, self-discovering more recently for myself, and it seems a lot of older – talk about religion, a lot of older spiritualities, namely a lot of shamanic influence, I think, when they talk about when shamans journey or when shamans are going into this subconscious, this unconscious realm, and they're meeting beings and they're traveling throughout the universe and through different dimensions and finding these, it's almost like he's alluding, not saying he thinks it's some sort of shamanic thing, but it's almost the same thing. I saw a very a correlation between what we know, at least of how the shamanic people and shamanic practitioners think and how they perceive, you know, different realms and interacting with people as what he's trying to do. And it kind of, again, it seems to coalesce with them, the Bigfoot and being you know, interdimensional, possibly, again, just a theory. So it's really interesting. But at the same time, again, with the shamanic realm, you're talking about someone trying to do the same thing that Stephen Greer's doing and the people that are very amateurish. You know, yes, you could bring in beings that are benevolent, but you could also bring in things that could be dangerous as well. And again, back to the whole multiple different kinds of alien species that people talk about, you know, the grays might be benevolent and more of like hands off, we just want to observe. But then you also have people talking about the reptilians and David Icke, and whether or not you believe in that kind of stuff. And they are certainly, from all accounts, I've never seen any kind of account of a quote unquote reptilian being benevolent, and most of the time they're vicious, you know. So what do we really know or that we're bringing in, you know, especially as someone amateurish, you know, especially even go back to the paranormal, you know, if you're an amateur going in there with a bunch of tools thinking you're like, I'm going to catch some ghosts, or I'm going to make contact with a bunch of ghosts and beings, you know, you don't know what you're bringing in. You could not only harm the people around you, but you could certainly bring something home to your family. You could bring something home to yourself. You could bring something into your body. Like, there's a lot of danger that comes with, you know, someone doing something amateur like this. I think there's merit in it, but I think there's more training needs to be had.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you brought up, because that's actually what I was going to talk about next, was the different species and subspecies of aliens in general. And, you know, we're going to talk about reptilians in general, and with the grays, because once again, when we get into the reptilians, like you said, the reptilians of the ufology remind me of the dogmen of cryptozoology. And once again, you just never hear about a good dogman encounter, very rarely. You do hear that there are stories that people say they do have them on their property, and they kind of live side by side and they leave them alone. Most 9 out of 10 stories you hear, a dogman's trying to tear up your car, get in your house, try to kill you in the woods. And when we hear about reptilians, it's the same thing. And I mean, you start getting into like how the reptilians run the government parts, and things like that, how a lot of missing children are actually because of reptilians, and they have the underground base. There was one in Ohio, that was the biggest one, and then there was another one. I forget where the second one was. But anyway,
I think they talked about underneath Denver Airport.
Yeah, there was two main hubs for the reptilian area, but I know one was Ohio. And but anyway, so they would basically, you know, kids would go missing, and the way it would say is that the reptilians would steal a kid or abduct a kid, because they would, you know, for whatever reason, that there's something about the children's blood that when they eat the child, it gives them something. A trade-off to the government, that the reptilians would leave government alone. But then you hear about, you know, the reptilians are in the White House. Whenever there's crooked things going on, it's more of the reptilian culture, not the gray culture. When you hear about grays, you more hear about, you know, alien abduction. You don't hear about reptilians really abducting people. Maybe, you know, children go missing, that's, but you don't hear about the abductions, like they come back. With the grays, you hear about scientific stuff where they abduct you, they do all this stuff to you, either, you know, take women's eggs, impregnate you, you know, go through your body, bring you back, and you've had that abduction experience. So why do you think that there's different levels? Like, where do you think a lot of these stories originated from? Just in your opinion.
I think, especially with the reptilians, they definitely, I feel with, you know, going back to what you were talking about, the ancient alien stuff, you know, they, our ancestors likely, if we're having experiences now with abduction and flying objects and everything like that, there's nothing to say that it wasn't happening in the past. You know, it could be a chance that this wasn't happening in the past, and foes and the aliens that were visiting us now did not have that technology, but it's certainly as plausible as they were visiting in the past. And for the reptilians specifically, I think we have to look also again at religion and different cultures, and we look at, you know, go back to Kenny was talking, you know, he's Christian, and you're talking about the snake. It's, you know, no one, it said serpent. That's all it said. It's always been a snake either way. But a reptile was our undoing, basically. You look at a lot of different cultures and other religions. You know, Quetzalcoatl is a serpent god in Aztec culture. It's a destroyer, you know, and a lot of destroyer gods or goddesses or a lot of destroyer beings in different religions end up being some sort of reptile, you know, and even just in popular lore, you know, look at how many, you know, and I think Amy is talking about, like, you know, the, like the truth and the lie thing, where, like, you know, they're kind of disseminating some information like, oh, yeah, it's a fictional show, but at the same time, you know, we're trying to get you prepared for when we finally disseminate this information to you and tell you, oh, yeah, this is not just fiction. This has been going on. These beings exist, you know. And there's theories on the reptilians, too. You know, there was the whole underground thing where they were here before us, and then some catastrophe happened either way. But, you know, again, going back to the beginning of the show where we're talking about disclosure and we're talking about how that would change us. I mean, think about one alien. Now we have two, three, four different species of aliens, all smarter than us, you know, that they're going to talk about. You know, so it's like, it's for us not to, you know, we just have to look at the fake stuff and just pull out what we can find as the real information. And there's just so much stuff on the reptilians in general that, and the gray aliens, I mean, they're all over our fictional material. You know, there has to be something in there. You know, people aren't just randomly thinking about this without having an encounter, without just exposure.
Yeah, I mean, Kenny,
Jerry, are
I mean,
you there?
Oh. I'm here. Are you there?
Yeah,
there is,
I just wanted to expand upon that point a little about the reptilians, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Oh, no, go right ahead.
And sort of tie it back into a theme that I wanted to touch on about consciousness. But so, interestingly enough, if Jeff mentioned earlier about shamans or people who have these different experiences, either through meditation, they can achieve these states of consciousness, or assisted through things psychedelic, ayahuasca, mescaline, peyote, DMT, you know, there's a ton of them out there, psilocybin, mushrooms, stuff like that. There is, interestingly enough, a common theme that reoccurs in people who go on these quote-unquote journeys with using psychedelic substances, and that is the imagery of a serpent. It appears almost universally in a lot of people's journeys, and it's interesting, I think, you know, that it appears there, and then it appears in this alien culture. So I'm wondering if there's sort of a connection here. But often what it ends up symbolizing is a lot of people are scared of snakes, one, so there's a fear component of it too. But oftentimes as the journey continues, it ends up being into one of a rebirth and a transformation. So like if you think the analogy of a snake shedding its skin, and that being a transformation and a rebirth, and then also to overcoming your fears, sort of shedding that fear. So it's the snake takes on like a metaphorical form in a lot of these quote unquote journeys. And I think that's very interesting that there's also a reptilian alien version too. You know what I mean?
Yep. Well, we find that in cryptozoology too. I mean, you could just think about that in movies. Like, it's funny because, you know, Jeff's sitting there talking about, you know, how, like, the serpent is kind of, like, always, like, the evil thing. I mean, think about Harry Potter. You know what I mean? Harry Voldemort, he's a snake. He's a serpent. And you think about, like, these simple things
movie.
In culture.
Not to mention
the what?
What book was it? It was a basilisk was, like, the main
yes.
thing fought in that movie. I mean, it continues. Dragons, yep. you know, dragons go to meat. You know, it's just nonstop. Interesting enough, though, actually, with the with Amy's stuff, the shaman stuff, reptiles and amphibians, if you follow like spirit animal kind of stuff, have always been representations of transformation. Like Amy's saying, you know, they shed their skin. They I don't want to say evolve, but they metamorphosize. And if we tie that back into one of the abilities that we think that reptilians have is to shape shift. So that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and Kenny, I mean, we can bring this right back into the crypto, you know, zoology department and cryptopunkologist. Is that even in the cryptids we have, you know, the Loveland Frogman, we have Lizardman, we have, you know, multiple reptilian type cryptids. And now, I mean, we're talking about reptilians in the ufology world. We have reptilians in the cryptozoology world that almost mimic each other. Like, sometimes you have to wonder, like, maybe some of these reptilians that we're talking about and on our side of cryptozoology could actually be a possible, you know, reptilian on the side of ufology. It could be the same thing. We're just seeing it two different ways.
I agree because, you know, there's also Alligator Man, you know. There's not a lot on it, but, you know, I mean, when you think of, you know, like, I hate to put it in this sense, but when you think of, like a large type of, you know, reptilian alien type of being. I mean, you've got to think about it and say, well, you know, what would Alligator Man actually look like? It might possibly look like something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's they almost like it crosses a little bit. Like, you know, you have like the Loveland Frogman, for instance, you know, where people see the frog and it looks like a man. But that technically, maybe it could be like almost something that overlaps ufology a little bit. Amy, what did you want to add to that?
Well, I just wanted to add that I think it's interesting that these sort of common themes and metaphors come up when people are in these different states of consciousness. So, you know, relationship between an individual's consciousness in the physical world and then everyone's consciousness united in the physical world. And there's been some really interesting studies, and some of them haven't been published, and that's a bummer. But, you know, we still don't know where consciousness lies in the brain. We know that it involves the brain, absolutely, but it may be non-local to the brain. We're still learning about this. You know, neuroscience is sort of a cutting-edge field of research. But why would these CE5 protocols of meditation, getting in that conscious state of mind, similar to people who go on these journeys with psychedelics or whatever, what about that works? You know what I mean? And so, you know, one of the theories is that, you know, the means to be awake, conscious, and sentient is what unites us. You know, we're awakened sentient beings, they're awakened sentient beings. And so if we can sort of align ourselves, our consciousness in a similar state, then that's what allows us to communicate. And some of the studies I just want to touch on real quick. I don't know how much time we have, Gary. I don't know if we're going until 8 or 8:15.
Keep going.
Okay. So they did these studies where there were crime-ridden areas, okay, just lots of bad crime, violent crime, stuff like that. And so they had 1% of the population. They moved these people in, right? And these people were experienced meditators. They moved them into the air. They didn't tell anybody about them. And all they did was ask them to meditate on reducing the crime, you know, just positive energy into that area and stuff like that. And then they followed it, and the crime went down. Nobody knew these people were there. Nobody knew what they were doing, but the crime went down statistically. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And they've also done some studies with random number generators where they have people do focused intention experiments and try to swing the random number generator towards a zero or towards a one. And it happens. It actually does work. And so there's something about consciousness that's affecting things on a quantum level. And then also, too, this one that was really super interesting that they talked about in the movie was this plant experiment. So they had this room, standard square cube room, and no windows. The only light was just a light on the ceiling. And that light could be pointed in any of four directions, and it was controlled by a random number generator. And they put a plant in one of the corners and just let it go. So, you know, the random number generator would say it would shine the light in corner 1, 2, 3, 4. But what they found was overwhelmingly that the plant light shined in the corner with the plant statistically more than any of the other three corners. So that was so cool because that tells you that something about life and consciousness bends probabilities in the physical world to the direction of what it needs. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's super amazing.
Yeah, so it's like that's what unites us in them is we're sentient, we're aware that we're aware, they're sentient, they're aware that they're aware. And you know, that's our commonality. That's our common ground, I think.
Yeah. We're going to add, Jeff.
When she was talking about the unconscious and stuff like that, it's actually funny. Carl Jung, a prominent psychoanalyst. There you go. You know, he proposed what he called the collective unconscious, and he had a bunch of other things that he grew off of later on in his life, from his travel around the world and looking at different spiritualities. And again, I hate to bring up the shamanism stuff, but that's what he looked at. And his collective unconscious theory, or his position on it, it wasn't really a theory, it was kind of what he thought it was this collective unconscious. And now, he originally called it a kind of like a series of memories of past ancestral knowledge that was passed down without like a full, like you're not learning something. It's just inherently known, kind of like our fear, like I think Amy was talking about with the fear of snakes, or you know, certain things that we just know. We know, but almost like you're passed down memories already when we were just born. And on the neuroscience factor, I think when I look at psychologists that have delved into spiritualism and looked at problems more, can only study that in a quantum level. That's still a physical aspect, and almost like the, like Amy was saying, this unconscious may exist outside of a physical body. I mean, it may exist in that quantum realm, but not something that we can just, you know, readily study, and it doesn't exist, may not even exist in the brain itself. And it goes, what she was saying too about the plant, is that almost like everything has this some sort of consciousness, maybe not the level of consciousness that we may have, and this is how we're reaching out, like kind of like if each person is a drop in a gigantic ocean, you know, and we're able to drop, you know, we're able to meld back with that ocean once we fall back. Let's say something drops and hits the water. We come out for a brief time. That's our mortal consciousness. That's us right now. And we kind of dip back into that once we die, or if we go into those altered states of consciousness, and we can dip it back into that larger pool of consciousness. And that may mean that we can reach other beings potentially across the universe or across different, different dimensions. You know, who knows how big that consciousness could be. Again, this is something that was put forth kind of by Carl Jung more modernly back in the 1900s, when psychology was still learning stuff. And something that we've also thought about as cultures of the past have thought about, like this energy. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how everything's connected.
It also makes you wonder, like, how we define intelligence could be so far off. You know what I mean? So, for example, we don't think of a plant as being, you know, intelligent. But I think we define that based on whether it's sentient or not, and it's like a plant isn't awake and talking to us, so we're sort of like, it's not intelligent. But obviously,
no.
Something about it is. Something about it as a life form is intelligent. It is bending probabilities to shine a light on itself to nourish itself. I mean, that sounds pretty darn intelligent to me. I don't know.
You know, a physical way I can think about it now, I read a book, and it was about plants, but they looked at some fungi, and, you know, you would look out at the field, and there's different mushrooms and different combinations of that fungi coming up in, you know, in this field. But if you went lower on a soil level, like you went underground, they were actually all interconnected. And what the scientists actually found in this, when they were doing this research in this book, is that it was all one organism together across this mile-long field. It was all one organism, all connected by something you couldn't even see unless you dug up the ground. So I just liken it to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing, you know, and I mean, we can look at this same thing in, you know, Bigfootology, is that, you know, when we're in the woods, a lot of times people will say that they have, you know, how do you want to put it, like telepathy with a Bigfoot. So they're able to basically sit there, meditate right, and understand what a Bigfoot is possibly saying to them, even without saying words or anything. And we do hear about that side in the Bigfoot world. You know, and I personally, I do bring up the encounter I had at one point in time where I did have a psychic encounter, which what I believe, with a Bigfoot, and I saw it in my, you know, my mind's eye, know exactly what it was. I know what I saw. I know how I felt. And once again, it's just that, it's that consciousness of just, we're all connected in some way. So whatever, you know, can happen at those point in times, it happens, and you can't explain a lot of it. So, I mean, it would make sense on a, you know, on the level that we would be able to possibly, you know, do some meditation and call in, you know, a possible, you know, ET into us, which I don't think is always the greatest idea, maybe, but yeah. So, all right, well, I want to end on one more question, and this is something that I've, you know, I've been kind of thinking about all week, and I'll, you know, lay it out to you two. You know, so say, hypothetically, let's say that disclosure comes out that we've been visited, that we have aliens among us, that they're walking with us, as people say. What do you then say to all these scientists and all these people that have come up dead because they've been working on projects, have come out and said something, they randomly disappear, randomly found dead? Just this week, an Air Force colonel who commanded the 21st Space Force of the new Space Force, the 21st Space Wing, was found dead in his home. And once again, that just happened this week. And it's like, all right, well, he was fine. There was no issues with him, as stated before this. And then they randomly find him dead in his room. And this guy was a bigwig. Like, he did, he ran a lot of different things. He didn't test positive for COVID. You know, it was nothing to do with that. It was basically, he was just found dead. He served in an installation commander for Cheyenne Mountain Air Force Station in Colorado. He oversaw Clear Air Force Base Station in Alaska, Cavalier Air Force Station in North Dakota, Cape Cod Air Force Station in Massachusetts, and I think it's Thule Air Force Base in Greenland. So this guy has been like, he's the real deal. And now he randomly is found, he joins the Space Force, the new, you know, branch of the government, and now he's found dead. So you have to wonder, like, I mean, you have to wonder these conspiracy type things, because we see this time and time again in the subject of ufology, that people magically just get knocked off. So what do you think then the government, how would they even answer to that kind of question, saying, listen, you've been lying to us all these years. We know, and we hear, and when I say we know, it's not that we know, but we hear that these scientists who are super prominent scientists, big names scientists working on black ops projects, come out and say, you know, ETs do exist, this is why, blah, blah, blah. They get knocked off, and then there's nothing to talk about. But how would you think the government would even be able to cover something like that up if disclosure even came out?
Well, Gary, I'm not familiar with this case that you're talking about, but is it rumored that he was going to spill the beans on something?
No, that's what I think. That's what's weird about this case. It just came out this week on military.com. You can look it up. And the thing is, once again, it's there's a theory based on, because he's working in the Space Force Department, which is all the new, they're subject to a lot of information. This guy was subject to a lot of information. Nothing was going to spill the beans or anything like that. It's the more the fact that he was subject to so much information, and then magically he ends up just deceased, and there was no reason for him to end up deceased. That, I mean, once again, it's hearsay, you know, theirsay, but in the facts of the matter of what we're trying to state is, we do hear the stories, though, of, you know, all these prominent people that are linked to UFOs, ufology, things like that, working on alien crafts, working on alien bodies and autopsies and things like that, and then they magically end up missing, or they end up dead. That is documented. So they're very public, obviously. The more of those people are public. But what do you think, though? How would the government go about covering that up when we hear these stories, these people disappear by the MIB or whoever has, you know, access to who does these kind of things. How would the government even be able to cover something like that up? Because they've been, you've been lying, you've been saying that these things don't exist. You're lying to us, saying that they don't exist. But now you change your mind because you can't hide it no more. So now they do exist. But then all these people in the meantime have been met, just knocked off. Like, how do you even explain that?
You know, I'm not even sure if they'd answer that. The whole point, I think last time we talked about controlling the narrative, wanting to make sure that, these beings are definitely bad. These are a threat. This is why we got to do whatever, throw more money at the military or whatever. I don't think they would try to cover that. I don't think they would necessarily answer that issue of like, okay, well, if you knew about this the whole time, then why was such and such killed or why was he killed? I think that there are people at the top that know everything. And I think when someone does know too much, in order for them to control the dissemination of information, they're going to do what they know they can get away with, which plainly is murder. So it's like, it's kind of like they almost want to have people know pieces of everything and only a few people knowing the whole picture. Like you said,
yeah,
like the alien autopsy, like they may know certain things and they may be sworn to, top secret clearance and, certain levels of clearance that allow them to continue to doing that, but they're not going to be told everything.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So this is something that's, once again, it all comes back to disclosure, because there'd just be so much that would be come out, because they've just hid so much. So it's just something
I think they're getting to that point to where they're not going to be able to deny it for much longer, and that's why they released the video footage, and that's why I feel, within the next months or a year, they're going to start to be releasing a slow tide of information about everything. This way they can, again, the slower it comes out, the easier they can control that narrative. And they're losing control of the disclosure as more and more people have their experiences and more people are becoming vocal about their experiences and wanting to know. So eventually, to try and kind of quell, suspicion or quell like some sort of angry mob, they're going to slowly disseminate that information, and as long as they can control the narrative that, the story that they want to tell.
Well,
yeah.
Think about it. Say these CE5 protocols really do work, and you can, through your consciousness align with these aliens and have peaceful communication with them, and sort of whether they're in a dimensional or they truly are physically in a different part of the universe, but they can get here very fast through wormholes or whatever. That's semantics. But say these protocols really do work, right? That means everybody within themselves has the capability to make this communication. How the hell are they going to control everybody? You know what I mean? So
yeah, no, it's
fear 100%. Is a way to control. Fear is a way to
yep.
control. Maybe they don't want people doing this for some reason. I don't know. Why are there
yeah.
even things, entities like can to stifle enlightenment and all these different things. Or maybe they know something that we don't. Maybe there is a danger factor and they're trying to, they protect us, quote unquote. I mean, you can look at it a lot of different ways, but the DCE5 protocols work. Everybody can do it at any time. And how are you going to control everybody? You can't. So maybe they're trying to hedge this off at the pass somehow, for good reasons or not so good reasons.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. Well, this was a great show, once again, talking about all this consciousness stuff. That's just the way of life. Consciousness is the way of life. So, and end up tied in with the ufology. So it's amazing stuff to really think about, because everything's connected in one way or another, that universal mind, as they say. But I just want to thank Jeff and Amy so much for coming back and you know, coming back strong, and this is a lot of stuff for our guests to take in, you know. There's just a lot to think about.
Real quick, Gary,
thank
I just want to mention, if you don't mind, for people who do want to try the CE5 protocols, there is going to be a Skywatch here in New York on Friday, September 4th, down at the Pine Bush UFO Fair. They're going to be doing a CE5 event. So if you're open-minded and curious and not fearful, and this is something you want to try, check it out. Friday, September 4th, Pine Bush UFO Fair, CE5 Skywatch.
Cool. Well, awesome. Like I say, hopefully they have it and doesn't get canceled. And you know, you can try something new. But thank you guys so much for coming on, and we'll definitely have you on again in the future to talk all things aliens and UFOs.
Oh, I'd love
to
talk about some ghosts.
Yeah, well, no, that's a whole nother show too. We got those shows coming up too, so we got plenty to always talk about.
Ghosts are my favorite.
I know. But, all right, well, thank you, guys. Thank you, too, so much, and I will catch you on the flip side.
Thanks,
right.
Gary.
Thank you,
Kenny.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye, guys. Kenny, I mean, that's a lot to take in when you talk about the collective mind and consciousness and every other thing, man. I mean, there's just a lot to that.
There absolutely is, and, you know, I'm still dabbling in, you know, aliens and extraterrestrials, so, you know, a lot of this is definitely, you know, definitely a lot to take in, but very, very good, very interesting, and it, without a doubt, a lot to take in, two very, very smart individuals.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, when you deal in the worlds of ufology, when we're at our meetings and stuff, and we're talking about this after our team meetings, like, there's so much to get. It melts your brain. It really does. Like, you're just like, your brain's tired after, because when you start to really think about, you know, how much is involved in this, and then it's good that, you know, when you're hearing them talk. Now, on our side of cryptozoology, you know, and Bigfoot and things like that, and all the monsters, they overlap in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And it's like, and then you have to stop and really think, like, you know, we're always saying, like, oh, you know, well, Bigfoot, you know, it's not an alien, or is an alien, or, you know, is it a spiritual thing? We go on and on, you know, in the community about it. But, you know, you really have to stop and think, like, there's a lot of stuff on the ufology side that does say one way or another, like, these things exist on that side, and then we have this existing on our side, and we're like, wait a minute, like, You got to almost put those small pieces together like a puzzle, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No,
and then
absolutely.
And then it goes into the ancient alien theory. Like, this stuff goes back so far.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, none of this is new. And for us, like, on the thinking about the Native American side of it, on such a not even historic, because we have such a short history on this continent, it's crazy to think, like, what could be.
Yeah, I know. And it's I don't even know how to put words to it. It's tiring, to be honest with you.
It is tiring. That's what I said. Like, I'm brain dead. Like, my brain's melted, because whenever we talk ufology, my brain melts, because it's just so much information from such intelligent people that it's like it does make sense on such a quantum level. And this is like, man, what we do is easy. Like, you know, it's like, it's easy what we do in the woods. You know what I mean? And this stuff. This is why I believe that ufology is always in the forefront. You know, it never goes away, really, because there's just so much to it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and you know, who knows? Maybe that's their way of trying to slowly take over by melting our brains.
You know, I mean, I guess that's the best way. A tired brain is a defeated brain, I guess, in some ways, right?
It is. It very, very much.
All right, buddy. So, well, we're going to end this. Do you have any last words for our guests before we get out of here? Because other than we need a nap.
Yeah. You know, continue to stay safe and take care of each other. Love each other. And we'll catch you on the next show.
All right. And as always, Squatch Nation, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And we'll be back in 2 weeks, all right, with another show at the end of the month. We're going to take next week off. And as always, stay safe out there. Stay healthy. Get outdoors, because it's going to be nice. And I guess social distance if you have to. And as always, Keep it squatchy. See you on the trail. Deuces, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the NYBS Radio Show. Tune in next time as we continue our search for Bigfoot right here in the great state of New York. Until next time, friends, keep it squatchy, and we'll see you out on the trail.